Good morning, everyone. Beautiful morning this morning. Please join me in prayer. Oh, Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, beloved Jesus Christ, blessed Master, dearest Mother, saints and sages of all religions, I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles. And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple. Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Peace. Amen. Love all of us being here this morning together. Floating in an ocean of bliss, so we'll see what God manufactures to this form. Reading from the Autobiography of a Yogi, Chapter 9, The Blissful Devotee and His Cosmic Romance, about Master Mahasya. Little sir, please be seated. I am talking to my Divine Mother. Silently I had entered the room in great awe. The angelic appearance of Master Mahasya fairly dazzled me. With silky white beard and large lustrous eyes, he seemed an incarnation of purity. His upraised chin and folded hands apprised me that my first visit had disturbed him in the midst of his devotions. His simple words of greeting produced the most violent effect on my nature that I had experienced so far. The bitter separation of my mother's death I had thought the measure of all anguish. Now an agony of separation from my divine mother was an indescribable torture of the spirit. I fell moaning to the floor. Little sir, quiet yourself. The saint was sympathetically distressed. Abandoned in some oceanic desolation, I clutched his feet as my sole raft of my rescue. Holy sir, thy intercession, ask Divine Mother if I find any favor in her sight. This promise is one not easily bestowed, the Master constrained to silence. Beyond reach of doubt, I was convinced that Master Mahasya was in intimate converse with the Universal Mother. It was a deep humiliation to realize that my eyes were blind to her, even at this moment was perceptible to the faultless gaze of the saint. Shamelessly gripping his feet, deaf to his gentle remonstrances, I besought him again and again for his intervening grace. I will make your plea to the beloved. The master capitulated. Capitulation came with a slow, compassionate smile. What power in those few words, that my being should know release from its stormy exile. Sir, remember your pledge. I shall return here for her message. Joyful anticipation rang in my voice that only a moment ago had been sobbing in sorrow. Descending the long stairway, I was overwhelmed by memories. This house, at 50 Amherst Street, now the residence of Master Mahasya, had once been my family home, scene of my mother's death. Here my human heart had broken for the vanished mother, and here today my spirit had been as though crucified by absence of my divine mother. Hallowed walls, silent witness of my grievous hurts and final healing. My steps were eager as I returned to my Gupar Road home. Seeking the seclusion of my small attic, I remained in meditation until 10 o'clock. The darkness of the warm Indian night was suddenly lit by a wondrous vision. Haloed in splendor,
the Divine Mother stood before me, her face tenderly smiling with beauty itself. Always have I loved thee, ever shall I love thee. The celestial tone still ringing in the ear ere she disappeared. The sun on the following morning had hardly risen to an angle of decorum when I paid my second visit to Master Mahasya. Climbing the staircase in the house of the poignant memories, I reached his fourth floor home. The knob of the door was wrapped with a cloth, a hint, I felt, that the saint desired privacy. As I stood irresolutely on the landing, the door was opened by the master's welcoming hand. I knelt at his holy feet in a playful mood. I wore a solemn mask over my face, hiding the divine elation. "Sir, I have come, very early, I confess, for your message. Did the beloved mother say anything about me?" "Mischievous little sir." Not another remark would he make. Apparently, my assumed gravity was unimpressive. "Why so mysterious, so evasive? Do saints never speak plainly?" Perhaps I was a little provoked. This I might add in parentheses after Master was trying to fool the Master. "Must you test me?" His calm eyes full of understanding. "Could I add a single word this morning to the assurance you received last night at 10 o'clock from the beautiful mother herself?" Master Mahasya possessed control over the floodgates of my soul. Again I plunged prostrate at his feet, but this time my tears welled from bliss and not from a pain past bearing. "Think you that your devotion did not touch the infinite mercy? The motherhood of God that you have worshipped in forms both human and divine could never fail to answer your forsaken cry." Who was a simple saint whose least request to the universal spirit met with sweet acquiescence? His role in the world was humble, as befitted the greatest man of humility I ever knew. In this Amherst Street house, Master Mahasya conducted a small high school for boys. No words of chastisement passed his lips. No rule and fur rule maintained his discipline. Higher mathematics, indeed, were taught in these modest classrooms, with a chemistry of love absent from the textbooks. He spread his wisdom by spiritual contagion rather than impenetrable precept. Consumed by an unsophisticated passion for the Divine Mother, the saint no more demanded outward forms of respect than a child. "I am not your guru. He shall come later," he told me. "Through his guidance, your experiences of the divine in terms of love and devotion shall be translated into his terms of fathomless wisdom." In India and in the East, perhaps as nowhere else, Divine Mother is worshipped. Today we honor motherhood in all forms. And motherhood is the most wonderful of things. It is the way that God has designed that this human race and all creation should continue in its various forms from one generation to the next. Mother used to say that the mother goes into the jaws of death in order to bring out life. Sometimes this is more symbolic than literal, but there are times when it is literal. And that there have been times where mothers have gone into near states of death. We had one such situation where the mother was bleeding and internally, and it could not be turned off, and it was feared that we might lose her. It's interesting in the way that God uses this form, because during that week I was in extreme state of weakness and had tremendous pain. And it turned out that she came out all right, although she was not able to bear any more children after that for fear that it would be too hard on her body. but she brought forth a wonderful godchild, a tremendous soul. And so this is the way that nature has designed us, but there is a higher mathematics. There is a higher version to everything that we see in the human sense. This world and all creation is a manifestation of the divine. It is but a reflection. And so everything that we see in the outer form is reflected of higher virtues and higher natures of God consciousness. Divine Mother is the most wonderful concept. There are people who object to referring to God with human kinds of attributes. Heavenly Father was a favorite phrase of Jesus, and he related mostly to the Father aspect. Our own Gurudev Mother thought of Heavenly Father first. But we have instances of Master and Papa as well, who worship Divine Mother above all. Master, we can hear his voice ringing, saying that Mother is closer than the Father. For Master, the Divine Mother was all the virtues of compassion and mercy and love and tenderness. When Papa traveled penniless all around India, he felt it was Divine Mother who was looking after him. He chanted the name Ram, but in his mind he was thinking of Divine Mother, that she would take care of him. Who else could? He was in such a childlike state where his mind was not operating in the way that it had been before. There is no planning. There is only attention to Ram's will. But it was up to Divine Mother to take care of him, to look after his every need. He put his full and complete total reliance upon her, and she answered the call in every way. You know, many of us want to be taken care of first. We want proof and demonstration that God will be our provider, that God will take care of us in the way that Divine Mother so dearly took care of Papa. But Papa first stepped out in faith. Now he had an inner assurance. He had an inner knowledge that was unshakable. And he set off in that total faith. He stepped out in that total knowledge. But it's not always an easy thing to do. But the human mind wants proof first, and then thinking, perhaps I'll be able to trust God. But it really works the other way around. We step out in faith first. When God asked me to take on this life that I currently lead, without any occupation, with a paycheck or anything else, it was an interesting choice that I thought he was making. And I thought, well, this will be interesting to see how this works out. I had no idea how he would work things out. And at every turn, he was worked things out to whatever I needed and much, much more. And he continues to do so. I can have no forethought. I can have no idea of collecting treasures up or anything else. It is just simply his flow, his supply that takes care of me. And whether we have a job that pays us a paycheck, or whether we live on some other means, in whatever way, it is God who supplies us. We must realize this. We must know this. When Ramakrishna, a great devotee of Divine Mother, he worshipped Mother in the form of Kali. Now, Kali is very fierce, very fierce. Kali has rows of skulls around her. Each one of these represent human minds or human egos. And each one have been cut off and hang as adornments around her. And so she has blood dripping down from her teeth. She's very fierce to look at. But she's very wonderful, very loving. When I was at Dakshineshwar, where Master used to go to with Master Mahasya, and where Ramakrishna had lived, They had there the statue of the Divine Kali. I stood out in front, and there was the statue that was being, the doors were being opened up, and there was a large crowd pressing in. And I just didn't feel to press in with this crowd in order to see this divine image. But I had a hankering to see it. I had read Ramakrishna's gospel many, many times. And so I thought to see it, but I didn't want to push in like that. And suddenly, a priest came from the side. He took me by the elbow, and he guided me around all the crushing crowd, took me in through a side door, and took me right up to the front. He didn't say a word to me. He just simply guided me up. And so I had my darshan. I had my view of the Divine Mother. And it was wonderful. It was most wonderful in the way that she provided, you see. Because at every moment, God is supplying us. If that were not true, we would not be able to breathe. We would not be able to think. We would not be able to do anything in this God-blessed world. We are completely and entirely dependent upon divine energy and consciousness every moment of the day. The fact that we are unaware of this is only due to the fact that our minds are blunted to what a divine mystery and what a wonderful miracle this life is from moment to moment. There is in no way that I can think of boredom in this life. It's too filled with divine activity. And that's whether anything is going on the outside or not, because I can tell you for a fact, there's far more going on the inside than there is the outside. As lovely as this day is, the sun is shining, it's a beautiful spring-like day, and it's wonderful, and it's wonderful to behold. And when we were down in Florida, we saw an IMAX movie on a very large screen, 65 feet high, and it was of the Hubble, the telescope that's up in space. And these huge images were coming up of stellar systems and galaxies and nebulas that were just fabulous. I had seen the pictures on a smaller scale, but it's really something to see on this large scale. And it's stupendous. It's a stupendous universe that we live in. One picture had 10,000 dots on it, and each one of those dots represented not a solar system, but a galaxy, an entire galaxy. There are billions of stars. And it's a magnificent creation. And yet, everything that we see in the outer sense, from the small to the immense, is but minuscule compared to what we have going on within our universe, right within us. Now, the fact that we are unaware of this is one of the great mysteries. Why would we fall asleep? Why would we not know what the Divine Mother is doing within us? You see, in the Indian cosmology, and the same is true in Christian symbology, Divine Father is spirit beyond all creation. Mother Nature, Divine Mother, Prakriti, expresses herself out through all creation. Perhaps comes with a big bang, and then all the universe explodes out from there. Spinning suns and planets and moons. And out and out and out it goes in this fiery array. And then at one point, at an appointed time, it all comes back into the one Spirit of God once again. And we are all microcosms of this great macrocosm, the universe. And within us, we go out and we explore God's body. And we explore it on the mineral, in the vegetable, in the animal, and finally the human kingdoms. And it is in the human that we can awaken this higher consciousness within us. And then all the life force is drawn back up into the higher regions of the brain and in the spine. And that is when we awaken to the divine nature. Now, Mother Kali is a fierce aspect of the Divine Mother. But the principle is that when you worship her, you have to face the fierce aspect. We see that in the universe and in the world that lives around us. We see destruction. We see wars. We see people treating each other without loving kindness or consideration or service for one another. Rather, there are many, many examples where greed takes over, where narrow-mindedness takes over, where there is violence, where there is pain. But it is all to remind us that there is a divine nature to it all. Now, we don't see it on the surface. And this is where people get confused. Because they watch the news. They see the destruction. They see everything that they consider to be wrong. But instead of taking that and piercing the veil that God has made through this creation, instead of using that as motivation and a reminder that this world can never satisfy the soul, those minds get carried further and further out into creation. They become disillusioned. They become critical. They become enamored, really, with the darkness instead of being awakened to the light. Isn't that an interesting thing to have happen? You'd think that when we encounter pain and difficulties, that it would serve as a spiritual reminder instead of taking us further and further out into delusion. But we find that with many souls, it's not true. But we can choose. We can choose when we see the pain in this life, when we see the difficulties. It is because we're just simply playing on the surface of all of this creation. And what is required is for us to dive deeper, to penetrate past the outer surface of this creation, and to awaken to the inner divine nature. Now, what happens when we do this? Well, first of all, we have to face ourselves, and we have to face these difficulties. I have told you before about an experience that God took me through many years, where I would sit down to meditate, and suddenly my perspective would be above the city of Seattle. I'd be looking out over the city and over the bay. And then I would see a missile coming in and an atomic explosion is a nuclear bomb that would go off. And at first it terrified me. It was a very real vision to me. And then I would see the destruction in my mind's eye. And I would wonder whether I even wanted to survive it or not, because I knew that there would be pain and there would be suffering. And this vision would come back to me. Every once in a while, it's enough to make you stop meditating, I can tell you. Because it's difficult. It was painful. It was frightening. But as the vision repeated itself at different times, my experience with it changed. And then I began to think, well, if I am to survive it, then perhaps God will put me in a position where I can serve those who will need me. And so then I thought about that, and that began to come into my inner vision. And I related to it in a different way. Some of the fear began to dissipate then. And I thought more in terms of service than I did in terms of fear what might happen to me. Now, down through the years, as I say, this would recur. And as I continued with it, continued to transform until one day, I remember, that the same internal vision came. And when that bomb went off, I felt that in my spirit I exploded with it, and I expanded out and out in a ray of light. And all fear disappeared from me. I felt the divine nature within that explosion. And it removed my fear. It removed my narrow-mindedness. It removed my preoccupation with myself. And I felt God within that. Now, from a human standpoint, it would be a terrible, terrible thing for such a thing to happen. But I know also, because of my own experience, that the divine nature that is behind this creation is absolute. When Papa says, the world is exactly the way that it ought to be, he's not just merely looking at the surface of things. You see, that's where people would find objection. Well, how could you say that murder or rape or other kinds of horrific things are perfect? But what he sees is the divine vibration behind everything. And that when we really look to worship God, the Divine Mother, when we, as Ramakrishna, sat down to worship Mother Kali in her fierce aspect, then we go beyond the outer forms and images of things. And we penetrate more deeply into the divine nature of this life. Now, Papa would not say that murder or rape or cruelty, those things disturbed him on a human level. You see? So it's not saying that those things are all right in that sense. But it is saying that everything ultimately works towards awakening the divine nature within you. And so when you think of Divine Mother, you think of the divine nature that is behind all creation. It is easy to see on a day like today. The flowers are in bloom, the sun is out, there's a wonderful smell in the air, and so it's easy to think of God in relationship to that. But also, if you were to walk through a war-torn area, and to equally feel in your heart a divine love pouring out through you, that you are there perhaps to serve, to pray for those individuals, to do whatever you can do to improve the lot and to reduce the suffering, and most of all, to help others to realize the divine nature within themselves. Divine Mother is constantly reaching out to us. And the Divine Mother is different than the Father. Divine Mother is that love. And when you relate to the Divine Mother, you see, you can relate so tenderly, so easily. You can receive those open arms that would receive you and love you and stroke away the pain and the sorrow and the disappointment that you may have had in life. Divine Father, Heavenly Father, is there to awaken wisdom and light and strength within you. Divine Mother is to soothe away the pain, to give love and compassion when it is needed. And isn't it always needed? Master had such a wonderful relationship with Divine Mother, as Papa did. And of course, Mother Hamilton was an expression of Divine Mother herself. And so we see embedded within her that tremendous love and compassion. She also had the Father aspect in total balance within her. So she could be tough. She could have that razor's edge. She could have that exacting nature, and she absolutely did. But always and forever, she would take us in her arms and love us, and we felt received by her, loved by her, all of God's love pouring out through her, because she and God were one. And this is the most lovely and wonderful secret. And this whispers from eternity by Master. When I was thinking of Divine Mother and Mother's Day, started thinking first of Mother's Day and then thought of Divine Mother. And Master came so powerfully to me. I feel him so present with us here today. And so I wanted to close with reading from his poem. Thou Mother of Flames, show thy face hidden beneath the veil of cosmic motion pictures. This is his poem to her. O Mother of Time, Space, Forms, and Relativity, thou hast taken a finite form, the Kali Divine, colossal, symbol image of all-sheltering nature. The Spirit was invisible and took the shape of a visible Mother Divine, in whom throbs the heart of all protecting, mothering kindness. O Mother Divine, thy beauty mark of the moon is set between the two dark eyebrows of twilight and night. Clouds of eternity veil thy face. Gusts of prophetic lives often have fitfully dared to blow thy veil of mystery away, momentarily revealing thy face, hiding behind the stairs of ignorance. O Mother Divine, in the dawn of creation we beheld thee on the track of time, roaming in the rustic attire of primitive culture, crowned with wild nature, and wearing the garland of unpolished minds and opaque, finite things. In the noonday of creation I beheld thee, wearing a garment of sunny mentalities, scorching souls with the heat of thy own material fire. Thy body of activity sweated with restlessness. All thy children felt the heat of want and implored thee to send the cooling breeze of peace. In thy noon hour of fulfillment, thou didst equally attend the forsaken slums of misery and the halls of festive prosperity and shrines of peaceful wisdom. In thy attire of midday mentalities, thou didst travel through the fiestas of centuries, beholding the dream of human life and death, of the evolution and dissolution of plants, of the birth and the death of civilizations, of the drama of nebula molding worlds, the dream of newborn planets and earthquakes and partial dissolutions. Then the dark night approached, and thou didst wear the grim, dark veil of mourning, to put creation through the terrible but purifying ordeal of destruction's fire. The sun burst and belched fire. The cosmic earthquake broke the vase of the sky, dropping embers of stars, and all creation was a furnace of flames. Everything was fire. For matter, sin, darkness, all things were cast into it, there to become pure, luminous flames. Creation came from fire. Beneath the ashes of matter, the embers of creation slept and rocked by the hands of Mother Divine. Creation awoke with its body of pure flames. Thy one hand holds the lightning sword of destruction. Another clutches the severed head of ignorance. Thy third hand of power wakes unseen creative force to take finite fairy forms. The wand of thy fourth hand stops the storms of cosmic discord, ushering in the soothing rays of peace. O Kali, thou wild mother of creative activity, wearing a garland of human minds, the rhythm of thy wild dance of creation ceases when thy footsteps touch the transcendental breast of thy invisible husband of infinity, Shiva, in whom all creation rests. O Mother Progress, the dance of thy life we hear in the tinkling bells of little laughing harmonious lives. On the floor of my tender thoughts, thy inspiration softly dance in tune with the music of the spheres. In the hall of creation, everywhere, O Kali, I hear the rhythm of thy footsteps, dancing wildly in the booming thunder, and softly in the song of atoms. The infinite sleeps beneath the shroud of magic delusion, and then, O goddess of forms, thy fantastic dances of finitude begin on thy bosom. Thou hast danced nearer than the throbs of my soul, and I heard the symphony of thy steps on the farthest horizons of my mind. Divine Mother, thou mayest dance everywhere, but oh, I pray thee, do thou ever play the music of thy magic footsteps in the sacred sanctum of my soul. O Mother Divine, in thy changing robes are the woven the dreams of creation, preservation, and destruction. Mother Divine, on the beauteous veil of thy mind, a million cinemas of cosmic dramas play. Thus dost thou entertain and amuse thy good children and frighten thy naughty ones. Mother Divine, draw aside thy glittering veil of cosmic motion pictures and show me thy delusion-driving face of mercy. We are all engaged in the most fantastic journey of discovering these divine truths and to know that divine consciousness permeates everything and all in all, and then we lose our fear. And most importantly, we lose the delusion that we are separate from the divine. God gives me many interesting tasks. On returning from Florida, I had received a call from someone who had called earlier, a few months ago, and asked about seeing a particular woman who said that she was a healer. And I had advised against it, but she went anyway. And now she was in trouble because this individual used dark arts and called it healing. And now she was in pain in her body, and she felt that this woman was drawing out her life energy. And in truth, it was. And so, together, we cut the cords of those connections of that individual. And then she was free, but within this body and this form, it took on the various darkness and evils that this individual was having to deal with. It's an interesting story that the gods, it is said, were all churning the ocean because they wanted the amrita. They wanted the nectar from which the gods would drink. And as they churned this ocean, there's a tremendous darkness. There's a poison that began to get extracted. And as this poison grew, as they continued to churn, they didn't know what else to do at this point. And so they prayed to and called upon Shiva. And Shiva came and he drank the poison. But it didn't harm him, but it turned his throat blue. He had to deal with it and transmute it into something that was once again pure. And so in some miniature way that God had me do the same, that I was able to drink this poison. And then it was all right. But you see, when you live with God, you lose your fear of these things. Evil has two ways to enter into you. One is through fear. The other is through desire, through greed. And if we lose our fear and we don't live in greed, then we are not in danger of any evil coming towards us. And yet, sometimes there are karmic ways that it comes to us still. But we should never be afraid. But we should live in the purity of God's light constantly. The great Master Jesus said that darkness hates the light. Darkness hates the light. It's not indifferent to the light. And it's not more powerful than the light. But if we give in to darkness, then darkness grows. But if we stay in the light, then darkness must be defeated. Sometimes it is a process. Sometimes you have to fight. Sometimes you have to muster every bit of your will to resist either fear or greed, and to stay focused upon the light. But if you do so, then light will certainly and surely prevail. So let us honor all mothers today, because without mothers, none of us would be here, isn't it so? But perhaps most importantly, Let us honor Divine Mother, without whom none of us would be here and all creation would not be here. And the best way, the highest way, to honor Divine Mother is to pierce the veil and see the divine consciousness that permeates all creation. I love Papa's story. I don't know if it's original to him. But he tells the story of the mother who's telling the story to the child. And she thought to enhance the storytelling, she would wear a mask. And in this case, she was telling a terrible story. So she wore a terrible mask. And at first, the child was afraid when this person came in with this terrible-looking mask on. And then the child somehow got the idea, I think this is my mother behind the mask. And so it reached forward and it lifted up the mask that veiled the face of his own mother. And when the child did so, then the face of the mother who was smiling and loving the child was revealed from behind the mask. So let us not become overly concerned with the mask, but dive deeper, penetrate that veil until you see the divine consciousness, so that everywhere you look, you see nothing but God unfolding in all of his purity and perfection. And then you, with Papa, will be able to say that the world is exactly as it ought to be, and it is perfect, because indeed, the Divine Mother is the perfection within all creation.